Welcome to the eighth episode of the Hard Questions Only podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Edgman. And for this episode, I want to zoom out a little bit, kind of take a step back from the hard and fast day-to-day topics that are happening. I want to talk a little bit about Trump's legacy. Although the word legacy generally has, you know, kind of a positive connotation, and maybe it's not the best word to describe what Trump has done, but it's the first word that comes to mind. So if you ask the average person what Trump has done, it's going to be generally one of two answers, depending upon what side of the aisle they're on. You ask a Democrat what Trump did, you can say he made a mess of immigration, he was extremely rude, he said awful things about women, he's just a disgusting person, and he is not worthy of our highest political office. And, you know, you could probably make an argument for a good bit of that stuff. If you were to ask someone on the other side of the aisle, they're going to say, well, with Trump, unemployment hasn't been this low in a long time, especially for minorities. The stock market has hit all-time high after all-time high. And jobs are good. GDP is growing. And the economy is chugging along as it should be. Taxes are, you know, okay, maybe better than they have been. And again, all of those, you can make a case, you know, for a Trump presidency on those grounds. But what almost no one will say, and certainly not anyone in the establishment, is that Trump has kind of, you know, pushed back the curtain to show what politics really is, and not in a good way. And I don't think this was intentional, because I think that would kind of imply that Trump is quite intelligent, which I don't believe. I think in most cases, all arrows point to him being quite uninformed and of extremely average intelligence, even if he does think he's a very stable genius. But I think he has revealed politics to be corrupt, self-interested, and on the whole, quite detached from the populace that they're expressly supposed to serve. And this has come about in a couple of ways. One of the most notable ones, I think, has been when he called the system, the military arms deals, for what they were, which is a military industrial complex. And not only did he use those words exactly, he also mentioned the fact that there were other people behind the curtain who were urging him to continue to do this, and he wasn't particularly about it, which he makes him a little bit of a hypocrite, because he's, you know, he sold, I don't know how many, you know, the dollar figure of weapons he sold to Saudi Arabia and Israel compared to Bush or Obama or anybody else, but he continued to do it. But the fact that he came out and said that was pretty wild, because that's a thing that undeniably exists, but no one ever says it, because it kind of mars the, you know, the perceived intentions of our military and our military actions. And to state explicitly that a military-industrial complex exists, you know, very heavily suggests that sometimes conflicts break out ignoble reasons that are not so glamorous. The true reasons, I should say, because there's always a forward-facing reason for doing these things, like invading Iraq and whatnot, and there's always actual reasons. Sometimes those align to varying degrees or another, but I think in very rare instances are those the same, with the exception of perhaps World War II. I don't know. Not a historian. And another one, which has been kind of slow and steady over the most of his presidency, has been calling out mainstream media for being fake news. Now, that term, I mean, it's obviously incredibly charged, but at the very least, it has been shown to be true to some degree, in that mainstream media will readily make very large, grandiose claims about Trump and people in his administration without a lot or any proof. And as soon as it's shown to be bunk, they drop it like a hot potato and move on to the next thing. Case in point would be, the Russia stuff that was dragged on for years and years, and nothing ever came of that. And Chris Cuomo and Jake Tapper never came out and said, yeah, sorry, we were wrong about this. They just shut the fuck up about it. And, the news cycle churned along, and that was that. But people acted like his metaphorical eulogy was already written. He was donezo. It was a sure thing. He colluded with Russia to win an election, and this, that, and the other. And absolutely zero came of that. And nobody talks about that. Well, Trump voters do. They talk about that. But no one else. Last week, he made a really notable video when the second stimulus bill was being hashed out, and he made a video about how there was too much extra crap in the bill, and it needed to be trimmed down, and he threatened to veto it when it got to his desk if the $600 direct payments to citizens wasn't increased to $2,000. And, it was all over conservative media and conservative pundits about where all of these seemingly random countries and organizations that were getting taxpayer dollars, which a lot of them looked like they didn't need it, or at least didn't need it right now, especially other countries, especially this gender studies in what, Pakistan? Like, who the hell even knows what that's for? But there are certainly more pressing issues. So Trump has, for better or worse, emboldened people to be kind of boisterous. People who don't like, leftist or democratic policies, or people who don't like the system in general, have been either created within his presidency. Like, if you want to make the argument that, the birth of the Proud Boys movement, which I don't know that anyone even really knows what their purpose is, implied or stated, but that has reared its head during Trump's presidency. Maybe it has something directly to do with him, perhaps not, I don't know. You have people being more vocal about lockdowns and quarantines and all of these regulations imposed by governors and mayors without any constitutional backing. And you have people just expressing louder and louder dissatisfaction with the system in its entirety. So those You know, those cans of worms have been opened, again, for better or worse. So now you have these people wound up for Trump and wound up generally against the system. Although, as a side note, I think you can make the argument that Trump is basically part of the system. You know, obviously that's what he ran on, being an outsider and drain the swamp this and drain the swamp that. But a lot of people that he appointed were people from the swamp. You know, people from what some right-wing people would call the deep state. People who hold very high positions of power that are unelected, and they just pass from one administration to the other, continuing to do, you know, slinky things, and no one is really sure. So Trump has not been as advertised in that department. But his willingness to kind of start Twitter beef sometimes, and just his tendency to be what we would probably call unpresidential has emboldened a lot of people and have given a lot of other people courage to speak up against what previously seemed to be a monolithic political media juggernaut, we'll call. So now these people are revving their engines, seemingly louder now than ever before. But Trump's presidency is nearing an end, which begs the question, who is going to replace Trump for all of those people? And how is that going to manifest itself? Are people going to look to Dan Crenshaw or Ted Cruz? Neither of those seem particularly likely. It's probably not going to be some old Republican boomer. I mean, Trump has gotten young people, you know, yelling like they haven't yelled since, shit, probably Ron Paul. And there's definitely something to be said for that. But I don't see anyone taking up that mantle. So I don't know where all of this... It's very hard to say where all of this energy is going to get diverted to. I can certainly... It's certainly easy to imagine that some of that energy... Some of that disappointed energy on the left, you know, with organizations like Black Lives Matter, is almost certainly going to get diverted. I'm willing to bet that they will start endorsing candidates or putting forth their own candidates and funding them, because Black Lives Matter has a lot of money. I can't find a concrete number, but I'm willing to bet it's in the tens of millions of dollars. And I guarantee they're going to do something with it to further their agenda, since they seem to be quite disappointed with Biden and Harris not giving them their ear after arguably helping to get them elected. And I don't see that happening for Republicans. It's really hard to say if that energy is going to fizzle out, it's going to be diverted into some new candidate or someone who's already ran before, like I said, like Ted Cruz. But something, it just doesn't seem likely. It just doesn't have the fire that people seem to expect. And, you know, as another side note, I'm willing to bet that the Republican Party will do everything in their power to keep someone like Trump from getting elected again. And by, when I say like Trump, I mean someone with his kind of attitude, his lack of a filter, his willingness to say things, you know, to call things as he sees them, regardless of whether or not he is seeing things accurately. And generally just someone who was rocking the boat and disrupting the establishment and the military-industrial complex as a whole, and all those great things that make politicians money and keep them in power. So, are all of those Trump voters going to roll over in 4 years when every Republican candidate is the definition of milquetoast? Maybe, maybe not. It seems really hard to say. But, honestly, I would be kind of disappointed if that were the case. People have, they seem to be wildly opinionated about what they want and what they don't want, but or I should say in particular what they don't want. They seem to be a lot less idea driven than Democrats these days. A lot of what they seem to say is in response to the things Democrats put forward, but that's a episode for another time. But I think those are I think all of those people who have been kind of transformed under the Trump presidency to be activists in some capacity, although it's kind of stretching that term probably, to get out in the streets and protest or march or be more active in politics in general. It's though that whole group of people seems to only have, one leader, and that's Trump. And once Trump leaves, that doesn't really leave anyone obvious to fill that vacuum. Certainly not Pence. I mean, he's probably said 5 words in the last 4 years. But it's going to be really interesting to see where that energy goes, if anywhere. But they have the Republican Party could very easily use that energy to their advantage and, turn it around and aim it at the Democratic Party and say, "You're right, let's get back to real conservatism and fiscal responsibility and all that stuff," although that seems extremely unlikely, given that people keep voting to increase the debt, except for when it comes to funding Democratic ideals. But it would be, poor strategy on their part, I think, to ignore that energy and not try their best to absorb it as much as they can. But I also think, to zoom out a little bit more, that young people, millennials and Gen Zers, are in general becoming a little more disillusioned with politics. Democrats are becoming disillusioned because of Trump, and Republicans are becoming disillusioned because of Democrats, although that's not really new, but I think that's been accelerated, and now both of those sides have a common enemy, which is politicians themselves, which is, congressmen and senators, primarily because of this bill and the fact that it is undeniably extremely simple to give the people what they seem to very badly want and need, which is direct stimulus. And it doesn't take 3,000 pages of an omnibus bill to do that. And everyone and their mother seems to see right through that garbage, that dumpster fire of a bill, which is that they're using COVID, the stimulus, to push through their own special interests. And if people vote against their special interests, then, whoa, they're voting against COVID relief too, and they must not care about the struggling American. And so both sides are pinning the other side against a wall, and the rest of us are watching by, eating our popcorn, watching the show, and understanding what it really is, which is it has been made, despite it being extremely easy to do what most people would consider the right thing, politicians very rapidly and without, you know, any real guise have decided to, you know, turn the situation into something that profits themselves and their special interests and their, you know, the lobbyists that they rub elbows with. And everybody can see it. And everybody seems to be quite pissed off, left, right, and center. So if that means a lot of people get voted out in the next 4 years, so be it. It's probably for the best. Will that happen? Probably not, because people seem to have a very short memory in politics, which is only exacerbated by a 24-hour news cycle. But politicians seem to be largely shooting themselves in the foot. And they're not getting a whole lot out of it. Like, sure, if one of these passes and it has all of this extra crap in it, well, yeah, they still get their money, you know. But now we know what their knee-jerk reaction is during a moment of national stress and anxiety, and that's to, you know, enrich themselves and propel their personal careers further rather than stopping for 2 fucking seconds and helping Joe the plumber, who desperately wants to pay his employees but is rapidly running out of money. So we got a lot of energy and a lot of anxiety and a lot of discontent. And people are going to be looking for new people to look up to, new faces on TV that's not fucking Pelosi and McConnell and Paul. And, you know, I don't know if it'll happen. People, you know, political energy seems to fizzle out, but I hope it doesn't, because people really need to grab the bull by the horns while they, you know, while they have it. But either way, it's going to be very interesting to watch all of this unfold. But that's all I have for this episode. If you've made it this far, I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in any of my other work or extracurriculars that I get into, feel free to roll over to my website at thomashedgeman.com. You can catch me on Twitter at Leibniz was first, LEIBNIZ was first. Feel free to strike up conversation or send me a good meme. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.